It's time for the truth without the spin, bias, and political correctness. Get that every day at dnewman.org. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
Welcome, folks, to Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. That's right. It's May 26th, Saturday, 2 days away from Memorial Day 2018. It's a very special holiday every year, Memorial Day. It's the last Monday in May, and it's a day where families get together. It's a huge travel day. Travel's predicted to be way up this weekend all across the United States, both in rail, in automobile, in airplane travel. And even though gasoline's a little more expensive this year than it has been, folks feel good about the economy. They're making more money, and they're going to be with family and friends all over the United States. Of course, traditionally, a lot of people start their vacation on Memorial Day weekend. So be safe if you're traveling. Hug your babies if you're going to be with your family members, and tell people over the holiday you love them. While we're doing all of that, let's remember this. We celebrate Memorial Day for one reason and one reason only, and that is to honor those who gave their lives in military protection of the United States to keep us the greatest country, the freest country on the face of the earth. So stop sometime this weekend and say a prayer for the families of those who gave their lives, the ultimate sacrifice for those of us still here in the United States of America. Well, yesterday was a big day, Friday. Of course, Thursday was when President Trump sent his letter to the North Korean leader canceling that summit scheduled for June the 12th in Singapore to discuss nuclear weapons being removed, being given up by North Korea from the Korean Peninsula. And boy, it began all kinds of outcry. In yesterday's podcast, we played some comments by some well-known politicians in the United States, several senators, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, in which they just basically dogged the president and blasted him for making a mistake or several mistakes in canceling that summit. Well, there were those that were on the right that said, not so fast, it's negotiation. We talked about yesterday, that's exactly what President Trump is so good at doing, is negotiating in deals, and that's what he's doing with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Sure enough, Friday, yesterday, a letter came the other way from North Korea, and it's such a shocking and quick response. I felt incumbent on us to read you that letter. The following is a statement issued by Mr. Kim Kai-gwan, the first Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. That's DPRK is the abbreviation, the official name of North Korea, following the cancellation of that summit. Here we go. Start the quote here. The historic summit is now high on the agenda between the DPRK and the U.S., and the preparations for it are being pushed forward at the final stage amid the remarkably great concern of the world. The sense, pursuit, and active efforts made by the DPRK to end the relations of hostility and distrust that have lasted for decades and build a new landmark for the improvement of the DPRK-U.S. relations have commanded unanimous sympathy and support from the public at home and abroad. But suddenly, President of the United States of America, Donald Trump, made public his official stand on May 24th to cancel the DPRK-U.S. summit that had already been made a fait accompli. Explaining the reason for it, he said that the statement made by Vice Foreign Minister of the DPRK, Cho Sun-hui, carried tremendous anger and open hostility, and that it is not appropriate to hold the meeting at present, a precious one, that has long been planned. I would like to take this expression of his stand on the DPRK-US summit as a decision not consistent with the desire of humankind for peace and stability in the world, to say nothing of those in the Korean Peninsula. As for the tremendous anger and open hostility referred to by President Trump, it is just a reaction to the unbridled remarks made by the U.S. side, which has long pressed the DPRK unilaterally to scrap nuclear program ahead of the DPRK-US summit. The inglorious situation today is a vivid expression of the severity of the present status of the hostile DPRK-US relations of long historical roots and the urgent necessity for the summit meeting for the improvement of the ties. As far as the historic DPRK-US summit is concerned, we have inwardly highly appreciated President Trump for having made the bold decision, which any other U.S. presidents dared not, and made efforts for such a crucial event as the summit. His sudden and unilateral announcement to cancel the summit is something unexpected to us, and we cannot but feel great regret for it. It is hard to guess the reasons. It could be that he lacked the will for the summit, or he might not have felt confident. But for our part, we have exerted sincere efforts, raising hope that the historic DPRK-US summit meeting and talks themselves would mark a meaningful start point for peace and security in the region and the world, and the improvement of bilateral relations as the first step forward to settling the issue through dialogue. We even inwardly hope that what is called Trump formula would help clear both sides of their worries and comply with the requirements of our side, and would be a wise way of substantial effect for settling the issue. The chairman of the State of Affairs Commission of the DPRK has also exerted all efforts for the preparations for the summit, saying that the meeting with President Trump could help make a good start. The U.S. side's unilateral announcement of the cancellation makes us think over if we were truly right to have made efforts for it and have opted for the new path. But we remain unchanged in our goal and will do everything we could for peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula and humankind. And we, broad-minded and open all the time, have the willingness to offer the U.S. side time and opportunity. The first meeting would not solve all, but solving even one at a time in a phased way would make the relations get better rather than making them get worse. The U.S. should ponder over that. We would like to make known to the U.S. side once again that we have the intent to sit with the U.S. to solve problems regardless of ways at any time. And end quote there. So, the North Koreans have come back and made it very clear, hey, we didn't want you to cancel. We're committed to make it happen. You closed the door. Is the door still open? Can we still talk? We need to talk. That is exactly what President Trump, in his wisdom and his ability at negotiating deals, maybe never before on an international scale with another country leader, but certainly over 40 or 50 years of being in business, he has negotiated international deals, many with foreign leaders, but not politically, in business. And guess what? They're not so different. He tried to make people understand negotiating is negotiating. It doesn't matter if it's politically, diplomatically, or if it's commercial business. Negotiations are just that. Negotiations. It's going to be interesting to see. And now late yesterday, the word in D.C. was that June 12th summit date could still possibly work. They may have that summit in Singapore after all on June 12th. Wow. More to come later. I can't wait. This just tickles me to death. I guess like Nancy Pelosi said, Kim Jong-un yesterday must be having a giggling fit. I'm kind of having a giggling fit thinking about those on the left denigrating the president and even gleefully in the leftist media laughing that President Trump had been beaten back by Kim Jong-un. And here, the North Koreans come crawling back and say, we want to talk. Hey, sit tight. When we come back, I have something very special to talk to you about today. It won't be long. That's next at dnewman.org.
We're here asking people from all over what they think of Lipton green tea. Let's hear what people from Texas have to say.
Mmm!
How about China?
Mmm.
Germany?
Mmm.
How about people from the North Pole?
Mmm.
Or Mars? What about mimes? Oh, right. People with their jaws wired shut?
Oh.
Yeah, a barbershop quartet.
Mmm.
Mmm. Oh, you guys are great. How about race car drivers?
Mmm.
Yeah, what about you, high school glee club, here on a field trip?
Mmm.
Mmm.
Well, that settles it. It sounds like everyone loves the taste of Lipton green tea. With its protective antioxidants from real tea, it's not just good for you, it's mmm to you. Lipton tea can do that.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
Mmm, that does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big Hot Pastrami, available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway, eat fresh.
No identity politics, no political elitism. Read and hear the truth, always sourced from facts. Right here at dnewman.org.
I got a story I want to tell you, and we're going to get to the moral of the story when we get to the end of it. But turn your radio up, turn your computer up, however you're listening to today's story at dnewman.org, and listen closely. Here we go. John Tyson brought a massive chicken business to Arkansas in the 1940s. Through the years, he and then his son and then his grandsons turned Tyson Foods into one of the world's largest food processors and the United States' largest producers of chickens. Chicken farms and huge chicken houses spot the Arkansas countryside by the hundreds, housing millions of chickens who are hatched, raised, fattened, then processed and distributed worldwide. One thing the Tysons discovered in the South is that southern varmints really like chickens. Varmints like foxes and snakes, especially snakes. Chicken snakes are abundant at chicken farms and en masse can create really big problems for chicken farmers, as you can imagine. Those snakes love eggs. And every once in a while, they relish an occasional chicken. One farmer years ago came across a dog breeder out west whose dogs had a propensity for sniffing out and killing chicken snakes. So he brought a few of those dogs back to Arkansas to his chicken houses. He was amazed at how quickly and how effective those dogs were in curtailing his snake problems. He told other chicken farmers about it, and before long, that Western breeder was selling every dog he could breed to Arkansas chicken farmers. There was a problem, though. Occasionally, one or two of the dogs would simply go postal on some chickens. Farmers began finding chickens randomly slaughtered, not often, just a few. But nevertheless, it became apparent several of the dogs decided to kill a chicken or two every once in a while. The chicken-killing dog problem was a conundrum for the chicken farmers. As you can imagine, the dogs had virtually eliminated chicken snakes that ate eggs and chickens. The dogs played an invaluable role in the chicken production process and its immense financial success for the state of Arkansas. Tyson Foods is a massive international corporation to this day, but those outlawed dogs back then had to be ferreted out and they had to be stopped. Their actions could no longer be tolerated. Some of the chicken farmers who had lost more chickens to the dogs than some of the other farmers thought the thing to do was completely do away with the dogs. and started a movement that spread all over northern Arkansas to do just that. Other farmers agreed that the chicken killers had to go, but the rest of the dogs were too valuable in their jobs to eliminate. After all, they were killing snakes. But thousands of Arkansas natives whose livelihood was totally dependent on chicken farming, who heard about the chicken-killing dogs, demanded all those chicken-killing dogs had to be eliminated. One of the Tyson Corporation managers developed a plan. Quietly, why not put cameras, video cameras, in each of the chicken houses to find out which dogs were guilty, then get rid of just the guilty dogs? Of course, that sounded like a really good idea, and it worked for a while. But that wasn't good enough. Those Arkansas natives whose entire income was derived from the chicken business saw those dogs as the enemy, not just the chicken-killing dogs that were identified on camera, but demanded that all the dogs be eliminated. Both sides staked out unrelenting positions on both sides of the issue. Neither side was willing to give in. And this problem is still alive in Arkansas to this day. The problem for all is this. Snakes are the real enemies of all the chickens and all the Arkansas people who rely on the chicken industry. The dogs are not the enemy. Getting rid of all the dogs will only allow, once again, the snake problem again, which means eggs and chickens disappear just like they did before. But the chicken killing by some dogs has got to stop, no matter the cost. The real problem? No one in Arkansas spent very much time in developing ideas to stop just the few dogs from killing chickens, while making sure the good snake dogs are there to continue killing snakes. So where am I going with this story? Well, I think by now you probably realize that story is not true. But it could be true. And if it was true, we have something happening today in the United States of America that's very, very similar to the chicken snake killing dogs in Arkansas. The NFL yesterday announced a new policy regarding players that had for a year a season and part of the season before, some players had been kneeling during the national anthem before games on national television and games that weren't even televised. And they've been doing it in protest. Of course, doing it during the national anthem opened up a can of worms because many Americans take the national anthem to heart. It means many things, many different things to many people. But to true patriots, the national anthem and it being played before spectacle events like football games and baseball games and hockey games and concerts, it's a pretty big deal. And to have participants on a knee protesting can be taken any one or any several of different ways. Unfortunately, when Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49er quarterback who initiated this practice in preseason of 2016, he didn't make it really clear exactly what he was protesting when he began the process. And a lot of ideas were bandied about. And of course, the press were all over Colin Kaepernick, and he gave a story, revised it several times, but the net effect basically is protesting police brutality to members of various minorities across the country. Most, and everybody understands this, about 70% of the players in the National Football League are African American. They're the backbone of the game, the actual game on the field. I formerly owned a professional football team in the Arena Football League, and I know how critical African Americans are to football. They're better athletes. Simply put, they are better athletes, better football players. And so, this is a really big deal. Looking at the nation, there is a lot of police brutality, more than any of us want to admit or believe that is there, but it is there. And much of it, not all of it, but much of it is driven by racism. No doubt about it. You see, a lot of people that get into law enforcement do so, and I don't know what the number is. I do know a lot of people that are in law enforcement. Through the years in my businesses, I've had dealings with many. There are a lot of people that let the sense of authority and power take over some of their thinking. And there are people who are in the police force that subscribe to that philosophy in their jobs. That's part of it. And you can't get away from the fact that there are racists in our police forces. There are racists in every company, in every organization. The police are not the only place where there is racism. But unfortunately, because of the job, members of police forces at every level, federal, state, and local, the job that they are there for, protecting Americans, keeping us safe, because that job is so important, we can't just go crazy and get rid of all of the police. In Arkansas, you can't get rid of all the dogs that kill snakes. Now, I am not likening anybody that police go after that break laws. I'm not likening them to snakes. That's just an illustration to show that often people, circumstances that are good, that make good things happen, part of what they do and part of the people that are involved in it sometimes is not good. But the overall effect, the overall job that they are there to do is absolutely necessary. And I don't know what the number, the percentages are. It depends on whose statistics you look at. There are as many different statistics as there are people talking about it. So there, you can't really rely on it. But here's the bottom line, folks. Police brutality is never acceptable. It should never happen. There should not be anybody, I don't care what race they're from, there should not be one person that is taken advantage of by somebody wearing a badge. Are there bad people out there in the police force? No doubt. Are there bad people on football teams? We all hear the stories about domestic abuse, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and professional sports. It's there. There are problems everywhere. There are people. And we can't just arbitrarily wave a magic wand and make it all go away. It's a process. What we've got to do is work together to find ways to fix these problems. And I'm sorry to say this, but brutality against members of police force does not fix the problem in any way. Retaliation is not the answer. Here's what I wish would happen. I've got good friends that coach in the NFL. I have three good friends that are head coaches of teams in the National Football League. I've got great friends that are assistant coaches. I have a kid that's like a son that plays for the San Francisco 49ers. And as I told you, I owned a team in the Arena Football League. I love professional football. I want it to be successful. I want it to succeed at every level. Football's a great game. Just like any business, like any professional sport, there are problems there besides the one we're talking about tonight. But you know what we do in America? We work together to push through and find resolution for problems in everything we do. It doesn't matter what it is. And folks, I don't think kneeling on the sidelines during the national anthem is an answer for stopping police brutality in any town, in any city, anywhere in America. The tough problem is it wasn't well thought through by these millionaires that are paid exorbitant amounts of money to play a game that they all have for most of their lives played for free. It's hard to get them to understand what everyday Americans think and feel about the national anthem. Further, so far it seems like no one has been able to explain to them in a way that they understand that they are in positions to make dramatically positive changes in the culture, both in police forces across this nation and African American people and people of other minorities that live in the populace that walk among and live among those members of those police forces on a daily basis. Every American needs to feel comfortable, needs to feel protected, needs to feel safe when they go to school, when they go to work, when they go to the grocery store. Americans, no Americans, need to have to look over their shoulders and worry about a member of law enforcement taking advantage of them. That has got to go away. So, just like there's been nobody in Arkansas that's come up with a way to just get rid of the bad dogs, the ones that kill chickens, and keep the dogs that just kill snakes, somebody's got to come up with a plan to take the bad seed out of law enforcement, wherever and whoever they are, while keeping the good ones there. Why? Because we need the good ones. That's the bottom line. These professional athletes have the perfect venue in their communities where they play. There are 32 cities in America that have NFL teams. In every one of those cities, people, guys that play on those professional football teams are just like gods in those cities. They could unilaterally, don't even talk about the football teams themselves, the administrations of those football teams, just the players, three or four guys could put together meetings, publicly held meetings that would include members of law enforcement and create panels and committees and bring in citizens and pass hands, shake hands, sit next to each other. And with the common cause of stopping all police brutality and getting a relationship developed between the population and police forces on every level would stop police brutality in itself. So I'm calling for players in the NFL and administrations of NFL teams, instead of using the national anthem as a way to protest, because when that happens, the NFL, of course, they've seen their television ratings plummet 18% in the last two seasons. That's millions and millions and billions of dollars of revenue that are lost. A lot of people don't know what I'm about to tell you, but the NFL players, they now share in team revenue. They have individual contracts, but their external and ancillary income is derived from a percentage of the NFL total revenues now. So as television ratings go down, as season ticket sales and single game sales go down, as merchandise sales go down, team revenues go down, the players are going to be penalized as well. People, perception is reality. Perception to fans, the ones that buy those tickets, the ones that buy that merchandise, the ones that go to games and go buy $12 beers and $15 hot dogs, those are the people that create that revenue for NFL teams and NFL players. And if they turn their backs on the NFL, what suffers? Revenue. Where does that come from? It doesn't just come from the pockets of NFL owners. It now comes from the pockets of players. The perception of people is that kneeling during the national anthem, not of all people, but of most people. And obviously, the results are showing that. Most people say you have a right to protest. Of course, you've got a First Amendment right to say anything except, you know, cry fire in a crowded theater. You could say anything. But you're an employee of a football team. You're an American. America and the people that we're going to celebrate on Monday for giving their lives for this country, Americans are the one group that gave you the opportunity to make millions of dollars. You know what the minimum salary for an NFL player is? $435,000 a year. $435,000 a year. A kicker that may play six plays in a game makes a minimum of $435,000 a year. It's a great living. It's a great opportunity. And as I said, most of these guys, many of these guys would play for free as they have most of their careers in football. Instead of kneeling, get with the Players Association. Those guys work for you. And come up with a plan in your individual cities to put together groups, to call on law enforcement, to call on citizens, and figure out solutions to stop what you've been protesting that has been unsuccessful so far. Continue the protest. But doing it the way it is now has not worked. You need to find other ways to see good results. Everybody deserves that. African Americans deserve that. So do Hispanics. So do Asians. Police brutality is unacceptable. That's going to wrap it up today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you being here every time we broadcast at dnewman.org.
Just because you think something's right doesn't mean it's right. Just because you think something's wrong doesn't mean it's wrong. But always get the truth about right and wrong here at dnewman.org.